All right, party people. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome once again to This Week in Mormons. My name is Jeff Openshaw, not Geoff, not Greg, not George. But you can call me Al if you want. Because that's the song. Not because of the erstwhile co-host. He who shall not be named. I'm just kidding. Anyway, I'm here with Kurt Frankum this week, everybody. What's up, Kurt?
Hey, have you and Al had a falling out? I want all the gossip. Let's get some rumors going.
The blood feud rivals that of the Danites and the local Missourians.
Yeah, this is how you get ratings, Jeff, is you fire the co-host for...
fabricate stuff.
That's right.
So. Actually...
I'm doing great, though, Jeff, since you asked.
Yeah, well, I care about you. You're the one who's here. Like,
I know.
Just as President Benson said, the most important prophet is the living prophet, and the most important co-host...
Is the
current co-host.
Is the one that's talking right now, Jeff.
Exactly,
I'm back at This Week in Mormons.
If for some reason you are unfamiliar with Kurt at this point, despite his many collaborations with us, he runs Leading Saints. Kurt, give us a quick primer.
Yeah, Leading Saints is a nonprofit organization that happens to have a podcast as well. And our mission is to help lay leaders within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to be better prepared to lead. And that's what we're doing, Jeff.
And did you know, everybody, 2019 is already here. It's time to get your calendar.
That's right. Are you sick of that?
In case you haven't heard that bumper on every single episode.
It's done, Jeff. Hey, and the calendar is still selling, so why would I stop if people are still ordering the calendar?
I like your calendar. It's very nice looking.
Do you have one, Jeff?
No, I told you last week I was thinking about buying one, but then you told me it's not dry erase, so what am I supposed to do with it?
Well,
if you go down, my ward is fickle. We have an activity planned in sometime in, I don't know, April. And then we decided to change the date because nobody looked and realized there was some other Stake Relief Society conflict.
You could use whiteout.
So then the kids will be sniffing it.
That's right. That's true. But there are hundreds of bishops and ward councils that have ordered this calendar and have zero complaints. So I may just send you one, Jeff, because you deserve one.
That's what I always hope for, too. I'm never hoping for nothing for positive feedback. I just like it when people have zero complaints. As long as you have nothing negative to say.
Absolutely. Then everything must be fine. So that's what we're doing.
That's how we think. Anyway, folks, go over to Leading Saints. Subscribe to Kurt's podcast.
That's right.
Anything new going on your front with Leading Saints? Anything?
Oh, we got all sorts of things. So next month, we're releasing our third virtual summit, which is basically an online conference for those of you that are not in the know of virtual summits. And this one we did, our first one was on motivation and how to motivate people. Our second one was on teaching and how to effectively teach in the church. And this one is going to be called Questioning Saints. And it's going to be a resource for leaders to better understand how to fellowship and minister to those who may be questioning their faith or wrestling with doubt.
I have heard recently that from a few places that even asking questions or researching is essentially the wrong course of action. Are you saying...
I don't know if that's exactly what he said. Didn't he say that... What did he say is the
I believe
wrong
the phrase went out there that was, what was it? Whack-a-mole of some sort has been described?
Yes, I believe we actually discussed
that. I think
that
we talked about
on
that
past
one. Yeah, we talked
episode.
About that one.
We did. So, no, and this is not going to be like... it's going to be like zero content about like answers as far as like, well, how would you answer this historical concern about, you know, blacks in the priesthood or Joseph Smith's polygamy? Like, it's more about like, how can we build empathy? How can we better understand and not just sort
That's
of alienate them or, you know, make them feel like they're less of a child of God because they're now questioning. But there's so much more we can do as leadership to, you know, to make room for those that doubt and that have sincere questions. There's nothing wrong with that.
I would submit even some of the verbiage we're using right now, we could modify a bit. We're using phrases like them or, you know, there's room for them. It's
right.
Almost as if to assume that's an abnormality and we can make space. Whereas I think we should just assume people have questions. We're all imperfect.
Right. We all have questions, Jeff. We're all looking for a space in the pews.
We're all working through stuff, and I think some people's questions can be they vary. Some people can be in matters of I heard the term deep doctrine was thrown around over the weekend, but you know, doctrinal issues, historical issues, cultural issues,
yeah.
All sorts of things. But we all go through different stuff. Everyone's got things that could trip them up.
Yeah.
We're all different.
And so that's exactly the type of message and content that we're trying to build around the summit, is to understand that, you know, we're all dealing with something. We're all, our faith, we're all transitioning to some level in our faith, as we should be. If you're stagnant, I don't think your experience is what it should be in the gospel. If you're just, you know, continue to believe how you believe, and you got to challenge and find new knowledge.
I don't think you'll grow in the church if you're stagnant or if you're complacent. If you think you've achieved a certain zen or equilibrium, and that's fine. I think then you just get bored with the gospel. Like, it needs to be challenging.
Which goes back to, you mentioned the culture. Like, we have this culture of like, well, every first Sunday you get a star on your forehead if you can stand up at the lectern and say, I know, right? And that's like, there's this I know club, and that you've therefore arrived, and so you just need to endure to the end at this point. But no, that's not healthy place to be spiritually, in my opinion.
I concur. Another reason I can't live in Utah, people get all hung up on I know.
Hey, whoa.
Look, man.
Now you're coming after my state. Okay, I agree with you. Okay, I'm just trying to show some Utah pride here. But
Utah pride, huh?
Yeah. I love this place. I mean, it's beautiful.
Isn't like a third of your state now filled with Californians who have fled so they can buy big houses?
Heathens. Right.
We brought you in and out. Don't be a jerk. We've
it's true. We're getting a Shake Shack, my friend.
I think I saw that.
I am so excited. Best hamburgers. I love the Shake Shack.
Shake Shack's fine.
Do you have them in D.C. there?
Yeah. Shake Shack started up in New York. So we've had them in D.C. for a little while. So it's not too much of a novelty, I'd say. Right. They're not. There's a good handful of them around.
Yeah,
They opt for more upscale urban areas. You don't find them down in like, you know, random suburban.
Yeah. No, it's an expensive hamburger. Like that, but I remember when In-N-Out, like the novelty of In-N-Out. Obviously, I served my mission in California, so it was like, this is it, you know. And then it came to Utah, and I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll have an In-N-Out, but it's nothing special.
And see, for me, it is special. And I think a lot of this has to do with what you grew up with. It's totally true. Because when I go home, we're always busy, and of course, you know, California is a land of fast food. Ironically, given how much health food there is in California and all that sort of stuff, but it's also the land of fast food because of cars and all sorts of things. So I naturally, like, I go home and I'm all the stuff I can't have in D.C. I'm like, I want to have some In-N-Out. I'd love to have some Del Taco. I want to have Carl's Jr. if I can get away with it, right? Because none of these exist back east. We have Hardee's, but even that's in the South. We don't have it up here. But In-N-Out's usually is the priority. If the other ones don't happen, whatever, life goes on. But I always want to have In-N-Out. It's a part of me.
And it's very affordable, the In-N-Out burger, as opposed to Shake Shack. I mean,
you'll talk to Texans who swear by Whataburger. And, you know, I myself don't get that as much, but I think it's the same thing. You know, if you're born and raised in Texas, you think Whataburger is just like the place to be. I do think a lot of people attempt to knock In-N-Out down a peg for some reason. So they often make comparisons to either Five Guys or to Shake Shack. But I feel like it's not quite apples to apples. You know, because different price points, as you mentioned. Especially that. I mean, they're not analogous. If you're spending that kind of money at Shake Shack, then I'd want to compare that kind of money to somewhere else that charges that kind of money for a hamburger and see what's better. Because In-N-Out's much more affordable.
It is.
We could have this discussion all day.
Hamburgers. We should start a hamburger podcast, Jeff. We could go on for days.
That gave me my next great idea, the hamburger podcast.
So what's up with you, Jeff? What's new in your life? The people want to know.
Well, gosh, golly, everybody. So first of all, everyone, I'm not sorry. You got to hear the sisters last week, and they're wonderful, and they're always doing great stuff. And
don't apologize for the sisters.
We had a little bit of a gap, though, but before that, we were dogged at every turn trying to get episodes up the past couple of weeks and keep things consistent. We had an episode recorded, and then all the audio was lost. And then
that's like every podcaster's nightmare, Jeff. Oh, it was the worst.
So then we were going to re-record the next week, earlier in the next week, a couple days later, and then my kid got violently sick, so parental stuff took over. So like we had a session ready to go, and we had to cancel. A lot of things sort of conspired to prevent us from getting a show out. So I'm sorry. So please know we're doing our very best, everybody. I won't let it happen again, okay? Just give me another chance.
You probably will, Jeff, but that's change. Okay. That's okay.
I can change. I can be different. I can be fundamentally different. I'll be the person you want me to be.
Repentance is real, Jeff, and we keep trying.
Thank you. I don't remember when we last spoke. Have we spoken since I went up to Philadelphia and went to the temple and stuff? Probably not.
No. Right
before that.
No, yeah. We talked about, I think it was the first year, right when the change, or no, we, it was like the day before the changes were announced. And so we were just talking about rumors that there's a change in the temple ceremony. So,
no. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, so we got up there. That was great. Going to the temple. It's hard. DC's closed right now. So, and it'll probably be closed until next summer sometime. We don't have a completion date or anything. Yeah. But that was great. Going up to the Philadelphia temple was wonderful. You know, I think the Lord sometimes, it's cliche, but he wants us to sacrifice a little bit. And roadblocks, yeah. It's funny how much they get in the way. And I reflected upon this after the fact. So I decided, I was just working at home that day on a Friday about a month ago. I'm working at home. We talked about, we've been trying to go up to Philadelphia. And it was my wife, it was our anniversary that weekend. We wanted to get up there. I've got family who lives reasonably close by. So my sister-in-law is like, hey, you can leave the kids. You guys can go up to Philadelphia, make a day of it. They'd stay at our house. We'd just run up there and come back, something. They had some issues come up. We kept having things come up. Like, we tried to get people to babysit our kids. Nothing was working out.
The adversary, Jeff.
No, it really is. It's kind of funny. It's not like it beats you down, but at the same time, you're just like, you know, it's like we can't just seem to get this locked in. And then it was Friday, and I was working at home, and we just decided, you know what, let's just go stay the night up there and bring the boys with us. We'll just get a hotel up in Philadelphia somewhere and figure this out. And I just teleworked. My wife drove, and I just tethered to my phone and just sat there and worked on the drive up there. My poor kids never got to see any of Philadelphia. We stayed in a hotel that was a 4-minute walk from the temple, which was great.
Awesome.
And they just hung out in the hotel room after we got there, and they didn't go anywhere until we left. And I did a session at night since we got there early enough. And then my wife did one early the next morning because nice. you have to trade off. That's the hard thing.
Any general reflections or feelings you had from the changes?
So much was made of it that I almost expected even more. Lots of just little bits of this and that stuff we don't, you know, not going to go into detail about, but
sure.
Just little words and verbiage and things that I'm like, that's a little bit different. Oh, that's a little bit different. Even stuff that's not, you know, covenant based necessarily, but just the way some of the dialogue was altered even, which I thought was interesting too.
And it was interesting to see how they, shortened the film so much that it just moved, you know, just from those still photos, you could just, there wasn't the space of people walking from one space to the next or that dead space, you know, they just plowed through it, which was great.
And the funny thing is everyone lauded it like, oh man, now it's 15 minutes shorter. But everyone's also seems to have forgotten that in 2013, when they brought in the new films, they added about 15 minutes to the videos in the first place.
Yeah, right.
Or to the total ceremony. So we're basically just back to where we were pre-2013. But it did feel like it clipped along. Yeah. I agree with that. I still have mixed feelings presentation-wise about the whole stills slideshow approach when it's actual screenshots of the one of the previous movies. Because sometimes it's just, you know, it's just random. I don't know. It felt very like 1980s. Yeah. Like your professor sets up the slide carousel.
Yeah.
Slide.
Waiting for it to beep, you know. Beep. And then clink.
A little bit. Other parts before that, before any live actors, when they redid some of the stuff, you know, the creation and things like that was very beautiful. But all in all, I mean, I liked it. I love the changes. Good feelings there all around. I certainly hope we can stuff to get up there regularly. I mean, I do envy you. I make fun of Utah, but I do envy you that because
like you said, sacrifice. Sometimes I have to sacrifice instead of driving 20 minutes to the Salt Lake Temple. I have to drive 25 minutes to the Jordan River Temple. You know, and so,
in the worst case scenario, you're stuck at Draper. I mean,
I know, or Ochre Mountain. I had, you know, no, so
you could be so lucky as to be around the Daybreak development, my friend.
I remember being on my mission in Sacramento. I was in the celestial room of the Oakland Temple, and this member there was, I don't know why we were talking about this, especially in the celestial room, but he was talking about, you know, found out I was from Utah, and he was, you know, about how close temples were. He's like, you know what? If temples were close to me, I would probably go 3 times a week. I'd be like, oh, whatever. Like, I get, like, there's that Utah Mormon thing, but everybody's human. You get into life, and it's like, wow, you know, 3 weeks have passed. I haven't even thought about the temple. 3 months have passed. I haven't thought about the temple. But anyways.
It is funny how much it's just like economic theory. It's a scarcity thing. I think the temple is harder to get to. You might not go there as frequently, but you make a more concerted effort to.
Yeah, like, and it's more of an event.
Around it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that time and time again. throughout my life, whether it's local, even when I was on my mission in Spain. I mean, the members there would even tell us, they're like, oh yeah, like the temple is mostly full of Portuguese people and like Italians and French. Like we used to like all save up and go on these big trips to Switzerland. Then they put the temple in Madrid and you're like, it's a 2-hour drive. I'll get there next weekend. Like, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
All the time. It's so easy to take it for granted.
Hmm.
Don't do it, people.
Don't do it.
Do better.
Go to
Speaking
the temple.
Speaking of some temple news, I've got a handful of temple mentions that are worth
Let's hit them.
Throwing out there if we can. Some closures, some groundbreakings, all kinds of things are going down. Let's talk about all of these. So, first of all, as you have known, there's a number of temples that are closed of late for long-term serious renovations. I mentioned the Washington, D.C. temple is one of those right now. And there's a number of other ones that are closed right now. Tokyo, Jordan River just came back online last year.
Yep.
The Oakland temple still closed, but they announced the reopening dates. There's a slew of them. And then the mini temples that are being completely rebuilt, which we'll talk about in a bit. So the St. George, Utah temple is the next one announced. And that's a big deal. The St. George temple is the longest serving temple of the dispensation. You had Kirtland and Nauvoo, which we lost for reasons. And St. George was the first one built.
Yeah, and it's old.
It's not like it hasn't been renovated since then, you know, but
right.
That's going down for a long time. It's going to close in November of this year, and it won't open again until sometime in 2022.
And that'll be like one of those rededications, right? I mean, they're stripping the thing down, right?
They do rededications for all these really lengthy ones. I think the only time they don't do a rededication is just when it's time for, you know, the semi-annual refurbishment, when they shut the temple down for 2 weeks or even a month or whatever, and then they just do this and that. These, they all say it's always about structural, mechanical, electrical, plumbing work. If they change anything else beyond that, I have no idea.
Right.
But it takes a long time. When you have an existing structure, you have to do a lot of work if you're going to like replace all the pipes, for example. That can be done, but it involves a lot of work to get in there. And
yeah, it's not a 2-week closure, that's for sure.
No.
Well, I guess I won't be going to St. George Temple anytime soon then.
Cedar City, though, so you're fine.
That's right.
And you've got the second temple, which, of course, they announced in Washington County.
Washington.
But that, of course, will not be done before that is all done.
Yeah.
Now, the other temple closure is kind of interesting. Hong Kong.
Have you ever been to Hong Kong? Seems like a newer temple. Wasn't that one of the temple surge, or was it a little before that?
A little before. They dedicated the Hong Kong temple in 1996. So
that's
only 23 years old. Hmm. Also, that just told me that somebody born in 1996 is now 23. Which,
yes, Jeff, we are old.
That's another weird thing to think about. But so it's a little bit before the surge, and it's a different building. But it's interesting you bring that up. It's a newer temple, right? So why would they be closing it already?
Did they say, Jeff?
They don't say, but the announcement is a little bit different from the other closures because they did not say anything about mechanicals, electrical, the usual stuff. And they also did not announce when they predict it will be reopened. It's just an open slate right now. All they said is it's closing in July, and that's it.
It's the communists, Jeff. Maybe the temple will just disappear. they're shutting them down.
If you'd read the article, Kurt, you'd remember that there's a one country, two systems approach because of Hong
Kong.
Yes. You retroceded to...
Yes, yes. I do remember. I was in high school when that happened.
But I have to imagine even the dedication of that temple was deliberate. 1997 was when Hong Kong went back to Chinese control, and they dedicated the temple a year before that, you know, get in under before the deadline, basically. Because I imagine now Hong Kong does have its own system, and I think religion is practiced freely, but I have to wonder if it would be more of a hassle to do such a thing at this juncture. Anyway, my mom, of all people, wrote an article about this if you guys want to read it, because she actually lives in China right now, and she had plenty.
Your mom lives in China?
Yes, sir.
What is she doing there?
Teaches English.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Through BYU. So she's out there, and she was actually just in Hong Kong the week before they announced they were going to close the temple and had just done a session there and things. And so this was all fresh on her mind. And basically, the prediction from her and others is that they're closing this temple because the temple was a multi-use structure. It was the first time we'd done this, right? So the temple itself was only a couple of the floors in this bigger building that also had, I think, like the mission office, stake office, housing for the mission president, the temple president, some temple workers, all of these different areas. And a lot of those functions have moved out of that building to a bigger building across the street now, more of a larger stake center type thing. So there's space in that building that's just unused right now, just empty space. And so the rumor is that they might actually be expanding the temple in this case. And that's why they haven't announced the nature of the closure. Mm-hmm. It's going to be more serious where they might actually gut most of the interior and rethink the entire interior layout and make it most of the, if not all of the whole building, a temple.
Nice.
And just a temple. That's all we know.
Wow. Jeff, this is random, but you mentioned your mother. She would be a great co-host for one of these.
No, she wouldn't.
I'm starting the petition now, Twim Nation. We will get
my mom doesn't even know how a record button works on a piece of anything.
Just get her, have a call in on Skype.
It's not worth the hassle. I promise you. Trying to deal with my mother and technology, I will just be just so irascible during the entire show.
So does she listen, Jeff?
No, she doesn't even know how this works. No. That's what I'm saying, man.
She's like, podcasting. Interesting. Okay.
Anyway, a couple quick mentions. So we've broken ground on the – oh, they haven't broken ground. They've announced the groundbreaking for the temple in Guam, and then also the temple in Pocatello, Idaho, and the temple in Cape Verde. So that's a lot of temples announced.
Yeah, they announced, what, 12 at the last conference, so now they got to announce these groundbreakings.
Well, and they also announced before this, they announced the groundbreaking for the temple in Puerto Rico. What is interesting, though, is Guam, Cape Verde, and Puerto Rico, all three temples were announced in the last conference. That's pretty fast.
Yeah,
October they're moving. Now. And all three of them share a similar design. I don't know if you're looking at it right now.
I am, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty small building.
It is. Does it share the same as the Pocatello? Is that what?
No, Pocatello's is bigger. Pocatello's got more of that anonymous modern thing that we kind of are good at doing.
Yeah. Yes.
But I'm intrigued by the design for, especially, we don't have Puerto Rico up here, but Puerto Rico and Cape Verde are basically the exact same building, except Cape Verde looks a little bit wider, like they might have made the wings a bit wider. But also, you might notice there's no Angel Moroni on these buildings.
Oh.
And I looked into this.
Because why wouldn't you, Jeff? That's what makes you Jeff from This Week in Mormons.
Look at the rendering of Pocatello. There is an Angel Moroni. And so I've seen this happen a couple times, so I decided to do the actual research and see which ones didn't have it. There are now five temples then, announced under construction, whatever's going on, with no Angel Moroni. You've got the one in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. You've got the one in Haiti, both of which I believe are being dedicated this year. And then you have these ones that share a design, Cape Verde, Puerto Rico, Guam. No Angel Moroni on any of those five. I'm looking for answers on this. I still have.
So that's as far as your research has taken you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If someone breaks into the temple department of the church, I'm looking at you first, Jeff. So.
I have some theories, but they don't completely hold up because the design building-wise for the DRC and Haiti, they share a similar design and floor plan as well. And I've assumed they did that to make a very inexpensive temple and also one that wouldn't stick out for perhaps being too grand in a poorer developing country. But as for Guam and Cape Verde's got a European standard of living. Guam's part is a United States territory. You know, Puerto Rico's a U.S. territory. I'm curious about that one, though. I don't fully get it. I don't know why they don't have Moroni.
Huh. I wonder who makes the final call on the Moroni. You think it's like a... like the chair of like the apostle that's on like the temple committee or,
and which one is, why don't they list their, they don't list all their assignments online. I feel like there needs to be like a dossier of some sort for the brethren.
Hey, there's a leaky website that could probably look into that for you, Jeff.
Well, I mean, like, it's not like it's a big secret. We all know that, Elder Uchtdorf chairs the missionary department.
Right.
Cool. Right. Why can't we, that's gotta be publicly available. Just who's doing what. I don't think that would be that weird of a thing to ask.
Right.
Kurt, you're more connected with the movie shakers.
I get emails all the time that people assume because I run a website called Leading Saints that I'm like actually in these meetings. We have no affiliation with the church, even though we're faithful members.
Yeah, that's nice. So you know people at the COB. So if you would do your, you know.
Okay. All right. I'll put some feelers out there.
Just, you know, help us out. Help us out.
What else we got going? What's happening? What about these missionaries can call home and
that
text,
probably should
Jeff?
Be our big. That's probably our biggest story of the week, isn't it?
Should we head there? Let me ask you with
take
this.
Me there. Take me there. Lead Tell off me with all this. About this.
So what you think back to your mission experience in Spain? What
it was
dynamic?
Superior. Yeah.
What dynamic would this bring to your experience there? Would it help? Would it not help? What do you think?
It's hard to say because I feel by the end of my mission, by the very, very end, I know I'm not alone in this. I was almost indifferent about even getting emails. Like, I didn't care. I was right. gone. You're gone for so long after 2 years with minimal contact from your family. And my mission ended right around Christmas. And I only say that to make it make sense that I didn't have like a Christmas call as a buffer before I had another, 4 months left or anything like that. When I had my Christmas call, I was going home in 10 days after that. So by the time it was getting near the end, it had been a long time since I talked to anybody on the phone, not since Father's Day. My parents are divorced. You actually get an extra call when your parents are divorced. So nice. That's kind of fun. But, so I don't know. I was so by the end there, just zoned in on the mission and just didn't even like, whatever, man, this is my life now.
Right.
You just kind of accept this is what I do.
And do you think that this will remove that, that type of mission experience where you feel more tied into home? And what's going on there? And so there's not like this complete disconnect, right?
And that's what I've wondered about. I know it's sad. So since they made this announcement, and by the way, to cover what it is, the church said that it's not required, but missionaries can now call home, text, or even do a quick video chat home once a week on preparation day if they want. They don't get called by their families. They are to call them. And it's up to them. Elder Uchtdorf said they don't expect them necessarily to do it every single week, but it's up to the missionaries to know their circumstances and know their companions' circumstances and do what they want to do. And the idea is, the official one anyway, is that it will help families feel more involved in the mission process. Less about, about encouraging the missionary, even though there's an element of that, but more about trying to get families to care and encourage them and know more than just letters home like, hey, we're teaching Frank again this week, but to hear more about it. I get that.
Yeah. So, and what about on the other end of the mission, like in the beginning? Because for me, like the first 6 months, like I was incredibly, maybe not the 6 months, but especially in the beginning, like I was incredibly like not necessarily homesick, but just getting used to like transitioning
that culture,
into
the culture shock of like the Central Valley of California. Yeah, it's ferocious.
Oh, come on. Sorry. Hey, but still, it's like,
I
was
all
like,
the suburban strip malls and things.
I hate you, Jeff. I hate you. It's been, since Al can't come on and say I hate you, I will take this opportunity. But nonetheless, like I remember my first Christmas call. I was like 4 or 5 months out, and just like yet like tearing myself away from the phone. And then I was just like in this daze for a few days, thinking like, "Holy cow! Like those people still exist." And like, and I, so for me, like though it was hard, like I think it was a benefit for me to just completely separate myself from communication for those first 6 months until then you move into that stage that you just described where you're just sort of like indifferent to it all, right? You're just like, you know what? I'm engaged in a good work here. I'm just going to do my thing. This is awesome. I'm on a spiritual high. And yeah, someday I'll go home,
Someday I'll go. Is that that's the missing song from the Book of Mormon soundtrack? Someday I'll go home. I'm with you on there. And the sad thing is though, man, did you see, there's been think pieces about this already. Over the weekend, this was announced last Friday, there were a lot of comments along the lines of, these weak kids. Like, seriously, why are they so coddled? They just have to have their devices and their contact. Can't they buck up, shut the door to the family and press on? I understand that mentality because that's kind of what I lived and that's what you live too as missionaries. Yeah. And it's very easy to say, like, come on, man, you tough it up. You say goodbye at the MTC and you know what you're getting into and that's it. And you focus on the work. You focus on the work. You're not talking to your family. Your family's a distraction. You don't have time for distractions. I'm mixed on this, I guess. I get that argument because I think it was good for me because, like I said, I focused in on the work. If I probably could have called home once a week. I don't know. I would have been all wrapped up in what my family was up to because ideally, it's because you want to share with them what you're doing and your family disciplines themselves well enough
right.
to want to kind of focus in on that. But of course, it's going to be like, and Jimmy had his concert. Oh, let's learn all about Jimmy. And I mean, when I got that same stuff, like phone calls, I don't know how it was for you near the end of the mission. The same thing, though. My phone calls home, I was just like, sorry for family members listening. It was nice to talk to all of you. But at the same time, I'd hear about that ephemera.
Yeah, just like the fluff, right?
And I was just like, I don't care. Like, I don't care. I'm glad you guys love me. It's nice to talk to you. But like, this is what I do right now. And I'm glad you're out here. Like, but I don't care. I don't care.
Well, and I think it also sitting down with like a blank piece of paper and a pen, or I guess with email, and just being, but even my mom made the comment, and we talked about this on Sunday, I went to my mom's for dinner, and she just saw, even in my mission, there was a transition from where they allowed us to email. And she said, even that transition from letter writing to email, like, they lost something like in the communication there, where being thoughtful and sitting down and say, how am I going to articulate this week in letter? And you know, you slow down because you're writing, you can't type, you can type a lot faster than you can write. And so and then not to mention, like, for I would say the vast majority of missionaries, the only way they have record of their mission is because they've made a phone call home, or I'm sorry, because they've written a letter or an email home, right? And this is gonna, I mean, why would you, as a 19-year-old, 18-year-old, why would you like get off the phone and be like, well, I guess I better write my family? Like, you're not gonna write them because you just talk to them, right?
But they do say that you're still supposed to write home. So I don't know if mission presidents will have to kind of enforce that, because it does seem like they're taking the mission president out of a lot of this equation. I don't see anyone here that says the mission president can decide the appropriate circumstances and time durations and all this sort of stuff. They're basically just saying it's up to the missionaries to make the choice and be responsible. So they're still supposed to write letters, but it's true. Like, what do you put in the letter then? Yeah. And I also transitioned to email during the mish. And I don't know. What I am grateful for is I have no idea what that email address was way back when, but my mom was smart enough to print all of my emails and their emails to me, and they're all in a binder. Yeah. So I still have like a written record of everything, because I don't think I have access to whatever inbox I was using back then. I think it was AOL, because I served before, you probably did too. When they first did email, there was no church controlled email address for you to get.
Yeah, it was sort of just rough that we.
Yeah, it was the Wild West. So I remember one time, because we used to go to internet cafes and just, that's where we do our email time on preparation day. And one time I signed into AOL to do it, and it signed me into instant AIM. Remember AIM?
I was there.
So it signed me into the instant messenger, and all of a sudden, like, I don't realize I'm on instant messenger, and all these friends start IMing me. So like, what are you doing? What's going on? I felt like I had broken every rule on the mission. I was like hastily shutting all these windows and signing out. Oh, I'm never going to receive blessings again.
Called your mission president in tears. You won't believe what I've done. So
no, I wouldn't go that far. There was the time, though, I wrote a strongly worded letter to my mission president when a transfer didn't go my way, so to speak.
It's like a letter to your congressman. Like, let me tell you, sir.
No, I kid you not. My exact verbiage, this is so stupid, was, look, I know that like the most important thing is, you know, we study it out in our mind, and if what the Lord says is what we do, and that's fine. But I was like, I just have to ask, did you study this out? That was basically what I asked. Because I felt like, because if you had, you would have clearly received the inspiration that aligns with my interests, right? But I don't know. So do you think the missionaries are weak? Do you think they're going to be distracted now and just thinking about home life all the time? They should have a no significant other clause, though. Don't you think that should be a rule in all of this? Because if you got a girlfriend,
they should have a what?
A no significant other clause.
Oh yeah, that was. Can the girlfriend just show up and while I'm here?
That's gonna mess.
Or the boyfriend? Yeah, that'd be interesting. What did you ask me? The question.
If the missionaries are weak.
If they're weak, right? Well, I think there's no contesting the fact that. Obviously, more missionaries are coming home. There's a lot more depression and anxiety going on. Maybe that's due to the younger missionary age or whatever it is. But in that context, like, I have some reservations about it all. But at the end of the day, like, I think this is a good idea and a step in the right direction of just saying, like not being so rigid. Because in my experience, it was that rigidity.
That is a word. You are correct.
Nice. Rigidity that really – it was made it very difficult to transition that. So maybe for Some, like myself, maybe that would have helped. But I don't know. I sort of appreciated the rigidity at the same time that just sort of, you know, I hit blast off and I was in a different universe and here we go.
See, what would have worked for me in hindsight, I think by the time I was in the field, I wasn't adjusted to field life, but it had been 9 weeks. Like I was kind of like used to being at least a missionary at that point.
Right.
What would have been useful to me, I think, would have been to be able to do this in the MTC, but I don't believe in the MTC they're giving you devices or things like that.
Right.
Because for me, that was the hardest. The initial week, the first week or so in the MTC, that was like the roughest time. And it's not, it wasn't pure homesickness. I mean, I wasn't, oh, I need everyone. But that was just, it's a huge transition, a huge shift from what you're used to.
Yeah.
No matter how prepared you think you're going to be, it was still very different. That, I would not have minded being able to just kind of message my family and be like, hey, this is.
Yeah. No, I literally had.
I thought it was going to be.
Like day five, I had this breakdown of all breakdowns with one of my MTC teachers. Like he was like interviewing each person and asking, you know, we were Spanish missionaries and quizzing us on certain things. And I just lost it. And it was good to release that emotion, Jeff, I'll tell you that. Because I remember just sitting there thinking like, I'm in this random computer lab learning about, you know, these random Spanish words and wow, my family is home and I'm not. And, you know, I think it would have maybe been a release valve to have some light content. But I'm guessing the MTC, they tell them, you know what, just buck up and you can't call home or text until after the MTC.
Enjoy the crappy food. Shut up.
It's good food, Jeff.
Sure.
They've improved it since our time, you know.
Well, maybe. Now, this is a total digression, but I don't know if you even remember this. So, of course, we both learned Spanish. I remember being in the computer labs as well. Mm-hmm. Spanish. And you saw those scenarios with those missionaries who were real missionaries at the time, but doing acting, but they were actual missionaries. Do you have any memory of the Argentinian Elder Barbarisha? Because he was everywhere. Do you remember Elder Barbarisha?
Was this on the computer or you're
this
saying like
on the computer when you'd watch like scenarios and stuff? He was featured all throughout. I only say this because for one, he was Argentinian and very obviously Argentinian. And two, he was in one of my mission areas and so it was awesome. So if anyone knows Elder Barbarisha, he was the ward mission leader in my ward in Valencia, and that was amazing.
That is a digression, Jeff. I do not remember this guy.
If you were in the MTC in the early 2000s and you went Spanish speaking, you need to comment on this episode on our website or Facebook. And I want to know if I'm alone in remembering beautiful Elder Barbarisha.
Barbarisha. All right. Well.
That's because in Argentina they do yeah. You know what
right.
I'm saying.
Right. Yes, they got that
I'm excited to see what happens with this.
Yeah, it'll be good. So, and it would be a good opportunity for your audience to comment on, you know, those that are missionary moms and dads and siblings, you know, how'd it go? Is it, it'd be interesting after, you know, 6 weeks or so when this really settles in, you know, maybe people would be like, oh, I totally forgot to text or call. Like, can you believe it? But anyways.
I hope they're on Instagram. I hope they're doing all kinds of things together. Let's see. We actually put a feeler out there for anybody to comment if they had any experiences this past week talking to their missionaries. Everyone just, let's see. I'm looking real quick.
Yeah.
Most of it is just, hey, it was great. It was cool. It was a lot of fun to feel more involved. And learn about their study habits and things I guess you don't write about a lot when you're a missionary if you think about it. I don't think I wrote much home about my study habits or things I was learning, like, in, I don't know, immediately anyway. So we'll see what happens. There's no segue to this. So the church might start paying taxes, everybody.
Oh boy. I'm going to take a nap while Jeff gives us our tax segment of this Week in Mormons.
I will be quick with this and try to make sense of it. This comes from By Common Consent. This was near the end of last month. So what this is all about is thanks to the United States, where the church is a tax-exempt organization, thanks to the late 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, you know, passed by the Republican-held Congress at the time, there's actually some verbiage in there and some changes to various rules and regulations that mean the church might actually have to pay taxes, whereas before they did not. So take that, tax relief. It turns out the reason—
Thanks a lot, Trump, right?
Yep.
Is that where—
I say that every day. Yep, every day before I go to work. Basically, this is because of the 1,200-spot underground parking garage that's in the plaza between the church administration building and the church office building in Salt Lake City. It all comes down to a parking lot. And before, the church didn't have to pay taxes of any of that stuff. But now, because employers, and I'm going to try to make sense of all of this, we'll link to it with the post, because I still don't get all of it, and I'm not a tax person. But essentially, there were tax benefits and transportation fringe benefits that you could give to employees, like, you know, transit passes, things along those lines, right? And if you did those things, I believe you didn't have to pay for parking or like real estate that went to transit. Basically, what happened though is employers can still provide transportation benefits to their employees, and the employees still don't have to include the value of those benefits in their gross income, but employers can no longer deduct the cost of providing those benefits as they used to. You see?
Whoa.
The church can't deduct. If the church is doling out, tax passes or something like that, before they could write that off. But now they can't.
Wow, that's going to be a big check that they write, Jeff.
And then this all gets into unrelated business taxable income, all this other fun stuff. And that's what gets more into the parking structure issue, because it's all related to transit and this and that. And by their calculations, you could be looking at $13,000 a month in taxes the church could owe because of this, that it doesn't currently pay.
They'll probably add a whole new line item to the tithing form that you can contribute to the fund that will pay for their parking garages.
This, of course, goes to the bigger issue of people who want to either think the church should pay taxes, or churches in general should pay taxes, or just wanting to have more transparency about church finances. But either way, I thought this was a fascinating little deep dive by Sam Brunson. Give it a read. Make more sense of it. You'll probably comment on how dumb I sound trying to explain it, which is fair, and I accept all of your castigation.
You should have him next on the show next week as a guest and really dig in.
Explain this to me like I'm a third grader.
Nice. Jeff, you know there's LDS organists volunteering at Seventh-day Adventist
churches.
Why is
this a story? So
what's
the,
that?
The shorthand is Mormons do nice things within the community. Ecumenism reigns.
Please, this is an Idaho paper. What is it? The Idaho State Journal. There's nothing else happening other than growing potatoes, and this is what happens. But you know, Idaho's organists are a dying breed. And in fact, I am – yeah, sure. I mean, how many – I mean, let alone you rarely hear about kids like being forced to sign up for piano lessons. I don't know, maybe, but I think it's definitely dropped since I was a teen and I weaseled my way out of piano lessons. But and then to learn the organ, I mean, and I remember as when I served as a bishop, it was like, man, thank goodness we had Sister Cottrell who knew how to play the organ, because when she was sick or out of town, we just had a default to the piano. So they're a dying breed. And there's actually, I encourage everybody to go to the LDS Ward Organist Facebook group.
Oh boy.
And just join it. I have joined it. I don't know a thing about how to play the organ, but it is fascinating.
Debates, are there fierce debates about playing with or without slippers? Is that what goes on?
The passion that these individuals have for playing the organ is respectable, Jeff. And
as are most passions, you jerk.
Right? No, it's just, anyways, there's also a, sorry, this, I'm, now it's my turn to digress. There's also a ward librarian group, which is fascinating to see people share pictures of how they're organizing the ward material center. So yeah,
it's not a library anymore. It's a material center.
A material center.
This is how you organize the ward material center, everybody. You make sure to keep track of who's checking out the TVs, and you just stock the copier with toner. That's the only function it has anymore. There, you might have your network hub in there for the building, but you don't need all those old VHS tapes. If you're a smart person, you'll digitize them and put them on YouTube for all of us to enjoy for posterity. But
I actually wrote an article on Leading Saints about that we need to get rid of the material center in churches and just have a smaller closet that has a copy machine in there and a handful of TVs, and we will survive.
Well, yeah, because nobody's going and finding those nice like cardboard or, you know, poster board pictures of apostles and things and pulling them out. If you want to show off who somebody is, everyone just, you just get someone.
Google Images, man. That's right there.
But what do you do with the extra space? I mean, I get it if it's in a place that's strapped for space, but in your typical, at least say a typical North American stake center, you're not going to gain that much usable square footage from changing that. So what's the main benefit?
Well, from my experience, the bishop's offices are generally just not big enough for like to hold a ward council meeting in. I know some are able to do that, but it'd be great to just have a room that's just sort of like the ward council room where every ward's ward council meets, you know, takes their turn in there. Yeah. I think there'd be uses, but this definitely, I mean, putting in there like old 1980s enzymes is not the answer to this. So,
but I love them. Oh, I love them.
I know, right?
There's some good YouTube channels where they've found a lot of old church videos. I used to want to have a feature on This Week in Mormons where we'd like review some ancient, some random old church video every week, really sink our teeth in, but I never want. If anyone's interested in running that column, by all means, shoot me an email. I'd be happy to set you up.
Have you seen the YouTube channel of like hard to find church LDS movies?
That's literally what I just said, Kurt.
Oh, you did?
If you'd spend less time focusing on your nonprofit and more time about what's in front of you.
Sorry. I thought you said something else.
Wasn't it Thomas S. Monson who said something that if you're always thinking about tomorrow, you'll have a lot of empty todays or something?
My todays are empty, Jeff. Yeah. I apologize. And I know you will not edit that out. And I'm willing to own up to
so
that.
So little editing goes on with this show.
We've been a lot of nuggets here, Jeff. The ward organist Facebook page, the librarian page.
Interestingly, though, did you know the church itself has a straight up, not a page, but there's a group? There's a group that is run by the church.
Isn't that new, though? I mean,
I think it is new. So it's not a page. Yeah. It's a group you can join. It's just a group. This is the church playing its trump card on all other like LDS affiliated groups. We're just going to make a group. Why would you go on to this group and ask questions and have a conversation when you can come to the one that's actually run by the church? The only one that says an official Facebook group of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, well. What do they talk about in there, Jeff?
The usual stuff, you know. Hey, I can't find my recipe for funeral potatoes. Does anyone have any tips?
Nice.
Is it true the church... Now I just want to go in there and troll it, which is so dumb. I'm an active Latter-day Saint, and yet I want to go in there and post this article about the church paying taxes and be like, what say ye?
Respond. Anyway. Mic drop.
Mic drop. So. Exactly, sir. So
where are we going next, Jeff? What story is appealing
to you? There's so many random things. I'm going to do another quick mentions here. The first young single adult ward in Asia was organized recently.
This young single adult ward movement is headed in the wrong direction,
in
Jeff.
Singapore. Good old Singapore. There's one stake in Singapore, and our on-the-ground reporting by good old Josie Gleave, bless her, our international correspondent.
He flew into Singapore.
No, I love Josie for this stuff. She doesn't just like look it up and say this is cool. She bothers to sit down with the stake president in an Area 70 and interview them and actually get their take on everything, which is awesome. I love that so much. So they reorganized the stake in Singapore recently, consolidated some wards, shuffled stuff around. This happens. And as part of it, they organized a YSA ward in Asia, which covers the whole country, but they were open about it and said, look, our activity rates are below the average, and we want to give them a place where they feel like they can belong, which is cool. And I think that's awesome that they've done this. Interestingly, there were a number of people from the Philippines who commented on this article and said, we have YSA wards in the Philippines. So, but Josie looked into this in advance, and we were all working this article, and she's like, oh, the map, I think it was the meeting house locator, shows a YSA ward in Manila. She called the public affairs office for the Philippines to see what was going on, and they said, no, there are a number of regular wards that have a lot of YSAs in them, sort of these, you know, focus wards, but there is no actual organized young single adult ward in the Philippines. That's according to those people. So we'll stand by that. Could still be wrong, but I'm going to stand by the information we were given and issue a retraction if other information ever comes to light.
Yeah, your retraction list is long, Jeff.
It is, and seldom visited. So
fake news.
Also, they're closing an MTC, which is a missionary training center, in Argentina. Normally, this wouldn't be a big deal.
They weren't producing any missionaries. They had to get rid of it.
My guess. This was a smaller MTC, but the big deal is this is the fourth one to close in a year. So they announced closures in Spain, Chile, and the Dominican Republic. Something against Spanish-speaking countries? There's some kind of a conspiracy going on here?
Aren't they still sending, like, if you get called Spanish-speaking, don't they send you to Mexico still? Or
I don't know
if it's still a thing.
Well, not it all depends. I don't know how it's worked in some of these other smaller Latin American ones. I, of course, did not go to Mexico, Kurt, because for the MTC. Neither did you, because last I checked.
But, I did not, no.
But I did go. We split our time between Provo and the MTC in Madrid. And I think some of them did it similarly like that, a little bit of time there, then you'd adjust. And if you were a native speaker, like from Argentina going to – or if you were from like Paraguay going to – Uruguay, you'd go to the Argentina MTC for 3 weeks and then go over to Uruguay or whatever. And I believe that's what they've done in most places. Now, of course, though, the Mexico MTC is a lot bigger. The Brazil MTC is huge. And the MTC in Ghana has gotten a lot bigger. They've renovated that and expanded it. And, of course, you have Provo. So fewer MTCs, but more space in some of the MTCs. But I don't know. It's kind of funny because they said that I've seen some other pieces about this where they said, this is great for the missionaries. It means they get to come to Provo. They get to see Temple Square. They get to see the church functioning like in all its
glory.
They
get to see Zion, Jeff.
I guess.
This is where.
But I don't like that because it's not that this is the church's. It's cool to see Temple Square and everything, but I don't think that just like, oh, I experienced the church in Utah. This is the standard by which all other church congregations should be measured.
Right.
We have to recognize our differences around the world. Anyway, but it's a big deal. It's just another temple, another MTC closing up, man.
How many we have now? You know, off the top of your head? Say like six.
The article that Jeff Borders wrote about this went into detail. I can tell you there are 11 remaining missionary training centers. So Utah, Brazil, Colombia has a missionary training center. England, Ghana, Guatemala, Mexico City, New Zealand, Peru, the Philippines, and South Africa.
Oh, we got plenty, Jeff. So we'll be just fine.
Most of those, other than Provo, Mexico City, and Brazil, and Ghana, hold fewer than like 100 missionaries at a time. And there used to be MTCs in Japan and Korea, but they also closed those. So that's what's up. That's all I have to say about that. Also, a quick notice. Since Kurt's not very invested in this episode, I'm just
going to
keep talking.
Sorry. You have a long list here. I'm thinking, what each of the 12 apostles are doing in the Rome, Italy temple? Are they each there? Or are you talking about the sculptures, the statues?
Why don't you tell us about it since you seem to know everything? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, so learn everything you need to know about the symbolism of the statues of the Rome, Italy Temple Visitor Center. As you know, there is a beautiful visitor center next to the new Rome, Italy Temple.
Open house
that has replicas of the 12 Apostle Temples and the Christus.
The 12 Apostles Temple?
What did I say? 12 Apostles. Yeah, you know what I mean.
It has
so, and then it gives
the same. It's the Christus statue comes from a church in Copenhagen,
right?
And then it's replicas of this. There's in that church there are statues of the 12 apostles also around the sides, and they've replicated those statues as well.
And each one of these apostles are you know like Peter has keys. Obviously, he's the key holder. Some have swords, and some are you know writing. And so I think that's kind of cool that there's a significance and symbolism between or behind all of that.
It is cool. I haven't been to the Rome, Italy temple, but I have been to the church of our Savior in Copenhagen. It's not huge, but it's awesome. It's fun. It's fun to walk in there and be like, dude, as a Latter-day Saint, I've seen that Christus statue in Temple Square and the LA Visitor Center and
it's
all
iconic.
This stuff going up. And I'm like, no, but this is the original one. There it is right here. Boom.
You've seen it.
It's right there. That's kind of neat. Nice. I think it's great that they kept with the theme and copied the other statues for that. Right. So other temple stuff, a lot of temple things this week. So some of the
temple and missionary stuff.
Mm-hmm. We've reported on the fact that a number of so-called mini temples from the Hinckley era also closed down for major renovations. But what the church did not reveal during this time, and in some cases, anecdotally at least, went out of its way to suppress, we could say, based on the emails some people have sent me. Is that these temples were torn down to the studs. They were built out of wood originally and rebuilt out of steel because they all basically had mold issues or other issues. There were temples that were built. The problem with the mini temples is they had one style of temple and they just plucked them wherever. But in the south, they have different weather patterns and none of them could handle the moisture issues. So that's what's apparently gone down in basically all of these from what we've heard from the wonderful members who have contacted us. The great news is a number of these are now getting closer to being rebuilt and rededicated. But the difference is, unlike other temples like Jordan River, I believe you guys had a large celebration and such. And I'm sure DC is going to have an open house when they reopen it. The mini temples will receive quiet, non-public rededications with no open house, no celebration, except for Oklahoma
City. Open house. I believe that's like missionary gold when you can invite people to tour the temple.
Yeah, but this is what's been coming down. I think the Oklahoma City one is slightly different, and that one might have closed for more earthquake-related reasons. But it seems that the other ones, they're kind of just quietly just going to reopen them and say, yippee, that's that. So this just feeds into the whole conspiracy thing. I mean, what is going on here, people? What is going on in the temple department whose leaders we don't know because the church doesn't publish it on the website?
It's the communists, Jeff. Same in China. They've now reached
Oklahoma. I think this is all because of Evan McMullen supporters. This is undoubtedly some sinister plot by Evan McMullen trying to keep himself relevant in 2019.
And most of the audience has no idea who you're talking about.
Listen to a show we did a few years ago, if you're interested.
He's the most popular guest on This Week in Mormons.
He's the man who almost took Utah from the clutches of one Donald John Trump. Also Hillary Clinton.
That's right. She was in there too.
Kurt is my favorite Republican, everybody. I hope you all know that. He is.
I try to be, Jeff. You know,
I mean,
not always proud to be a Republican.
After Spiro Agnew, it's definitely Kurt. 100%.
Wow. Well, what's it going to take to really stretch my lead?
Well, like Spiro, you might have to resign in a corruption scandal. But.
Okay, there's no corruption happening in my life.
The beauty of Spiro Agnew resigning is that because of that, Gerald Ford was the only president we've ever had who was not elected in any capacity to his office. So a little bit of history there, folks. I'm going to skip this one here. We're getting there. Kurt, maybe you can, I don't know if you have anything to say about this. You're in Utah, as we've established a few times on this show.
Let me break down the legislative session here happening in Utah right now. There's a bill up for the church is getting involved in relation to alcohol.
No, they've never done that before.
Yeah, we love to get involved with alcohol for some reason. But the LDS Church says it opposes a bill eliminating 3.2 beer in Utah. Now, I would explain to you what 3.2 beer is if I wasn't a Latter-day Saint. But I have no clue. Does this mean there's less alcohol in this and they don't like that? They don't like the gateway to Jack Daniels? Is that what this is?
I believe 3.2 beer means that it's 3.2% alcohol by volume. Okay. And that officially makes it, you know, near beer or what have you. A lot of states have raised their... So if I can kind of understand this, it's that... They're trying to raise the permissible ABV to still call it near beer, right? So the 3.2 has been going out the window for a long time. As of 2016, in fact, only five states, Oklahoma, Colorado, Utah, Kansas, and Minnesota, still mandated that alcohol content to be considered low alcohol. So I believe the issue here is that people want to raise it. Utah wants to raise the alcohol by volume content up a little bit higher, which is the trend, to still be in that bracket. Right?
That's what I understand.
SB 132 raises the legal definition to 4.8% alcohol by weight. And the church is against it.
That's right.
Why?
Because it's alcohol, Jeff. And it's evil. And we don't want our kids running around with alcohol or near beer, right?
Unless it's something else. Or is it near beer? Or is that like that's the maximum amount of alcohol in beer in Utah?
There is a podcast somewhere that's spoofing this conversation right now, Jeff, of two Latter-day Saints trying to understand beer. And let's just agree that we have no clue. And but nonetheless, the church wants to... put some influence there. We'll see how it unfolds as this legislative session rolls on.
I learned about whiskey when I lived in Scotland. I mean, I've got something.
That's all they drink there, Jeff. There's no water.
But I'm effectively useless on all of these fronts. Kurt, we're running long, but I'm curious. We're going to go here. Curious if you have any thoughts. So, weird.
Oh, boy. Yeah, let's just quickly touch on this one.
Weird story broke out earlier in the month. as you can see, Kurt's physical reaction right there. Just like, it's like collapsed away from his microphone in despair.
Why don't we hit a good, child abuse story just real quick.
This is a strange story, but the reason it really got plays. So you've got Sterling Van Wagenen, who is a Latter-day Saint director, producer, all these sorts of things. Of note in this article, because he actually is the one, I don't know, he did all three of them. He directed all three of the New Temple films that came out in 2013. I thought they had different directors. That's why they had kind of a different spin on each one. But I guess it's just one person. But what turns out, and this is that he admitted to molesting a child in the early 1990s. And many people have been talking about this because, of course, this was the early 90s, but then much later, he still made, temple videos. And two, because what was the church doing and why wasn't the classic, like, why was he not X'd? Why did this not happen? There's a lot of furor online about all this sort of stuff. It's a terrible account. The interesting part of it, though, I guess, is that he seems more forthright about his experience and that something happened with him molesting a kid, and then he left himself and like said to call up his bishop on his own and talk about what was happening. He basically said that, like, I went through church discipline and it's over. One would assume that he'd worked through that and the church was well aware of this, going into making New Temple films, later on. I would assume so, but many, this has been disquieting for some. I don't know if you've been following this story much. It's kind of come and gone. Yep. I haven't heard much about it. It lasted for like a week, and then it kind of died down. But
right, and now I think court proceedings aren't they beginning or something? And yes, it's an unfortunate case, and I hate hearing about these to any measure. And it just bring up the as far as he's disfellowshipped rather than excommunicated, and people have been excommunicated for much, much less. But nonetheless, that's how the lay leadership works when we do these disciplinary councils. So, also, it's unfortunate. I'm sure this will pop up back in the news as things progress, but it's awful.
And keeping with Utah politics and sad news, I guess, have you followed your Utah bill for the representative who wants to block Utahns from changing the gender listed on their birth certificate? Which is a big deal for us. Well, we preach that gender is eternal. That's a thing in the Family Proclamation for Latter-day Saints.
Right. I've just seen the headline maybe and read this article, but I don't know. It's just these interesting things we do, I guess. But 15 years ago, I don't think anybody was even thinking this was an issue to bring up, right? But nonetheless, these are questions that need to be addressed. So I don't know. I don't know how we feel about it, but I mean, anyways, what do you think, Jeff?
I feel like I'm making you feel weird right now, Kurt. You seem physically shaken.
I don't know. It's one of those, I guess, like your wife says sometimes, I don't know if I really have a strong opinion either way on this article. And I don't want to force myself to have a strong opinion. Right?
All right. Our time is going. I know there's Kurt, I know there's a story you want to take us out with, though. I know this matters a lot, too. And this is what our female listeners have been waiting for.
Oh, the garment one? Oh, here it is. I was looking in the wrong column here. Yes, there's new garments for women, maternity garments and nursing garments. And so,
did they not have these before? It's important that you and I know, males talk about this. Did they not have these before? Were there no nursing,
I guess,
and pregnancy
I have
specific garments?
I don't remember my wife having any type of nursing garment when she was nursing. I guess this is a new thing. So, hallelujah.
How did it take this long?
Revelation is real, Jeff.
We've been churning out kids for a while now as endowed Latter-day Saints.
And there's many women that are asking these same questions, but we have overcome the hesitation, and they are, I don't know if they're available now, but this just went up on LDS Living. So,
dude, I feel woke. I feel woke. Yeah. And
so
I'm excited. We're the worst people to talk about this. The sisters should bring this up when they do their next show.
This is similar to the alcohol story. We're just like, yeah, pretty great.
Dude, if you want to talk about nursing, will be easier. Soda, though, man. Have you ever had a Jolt? Oh my gosh, yeah. Changes your life for like 30
minutes.
Love me
some Jolt,
Jeff. 30
minutes,
and then your life is over. And then you crash very hard. It's very sad.
Nice.
Very sad. Well, that's great news for the ladies. I will link to that story. I would love more people's thoughts because it baffles me that if these didn't exist before. That's the thing. Or did they, and they were just like only onesies?
You're witnessing the beginning of Jeff's faith crisis right now. You just cannot fathom
how
a modern-day church with prophets and apostles.
I don't like to mock faith crises, but that was funny. That was funny, and I give you all points for the whole episode because of that.
Well, thank you.
You win the show this week.
Maybe you'll have me back, Jeff. I don't know.
Maybe, but you'll have to listen in every week, everybody, to tell.
That's right.
And the best way to keep up with us, of course, is to subscribe to this podcast. If you haven't done that, iTunes, you know, Apple Podcasts, of course. We still say iTunes, but more like Apple Podcasts.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Google has its, Android has a dedicated podcasts app. You can use Google Music as well, but there's a dedicated Android podcast app. It's Spartan, but that's actually very functional. Pocket Cast is popular. I believe that's one of Kurt's favorite ones.
That's my go-to. Uh-huh.
You can find us on all these things. We're even on Spotify now. So if you're a Spotifyer, search for This Week in Mormons, where you'll also find our theme song for your own streaming pleasure. All this stuff is there for you folks. Likewise, shoot us an email. Blah, blah, blah. Send me an email. Contact at thisweekinmormons.com, jeff@thisweekinmormons.com, whatever you want it to be. And of course, go to our website, thisweekinmormons.com. And if you're not a patron of this fine show, you should become one at patreon.com, patreon.com/thisweekinmormons, where you can show your twim love by pledging a whopping dollar a month. $1 a month, and I would love it because our hosting fees cost more than $1 a month. I will tell you that much right now. It would just be useful, is all I'm saying. It would be very nice. Anyway, Kurt, of course, you can find at leadingsaints.org. If you want to email Kurt,
yep.
Admin at Leading Saints, Kurt at leadingsaints.org.
Kurt at Leading Saints works, or we have a contact page. You go to leadingsaints.org/contact. And that'll make it to my
inbox as
well.
Oh, look at that.
That
right there, folks, is called a conversion. You go to his contact page, you fill out the info, and you submit it. That right there is called a conversion. That is a CTA.
Boom.
Call to action.
That's right.
See? Kurt studied
marketing.
And
we got
all this stuff.
A lot of good stuff over there at Leading Saints, so we'd love to have you.
They do. I thoroughly enjoyed the episode with, I forgot their, the Packards, was it? Or Packers?
The Packards, uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All about their experience setting up a nonprofit
in Mozambique.
But how it related to leadership and especially welfare and stuff in the church today, which was really compelling. It was an interesting listen. They're good folks. So
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Good one to start with if you haven't listened.
Tis. They're all good stuff, folks. So thanks for taking the time, everybody. Hope you're having a great week. Long show this week, so we don't edit things, so I don't care. This Week in Mormons is a production of Everyone Who's Here, and we hope you all have a terrific week. Be well, be holy, and be